You're listening to Orange County's only station with critical business information, Critical Mass, with your host, Rick Franzi.
Good afternoon and welcome to Critical Mass, the radio show. I am your host, Rick Franzi. I host this business talk show, which airs live on Tuesday and Wednesday afternoons at 4 p.m. If you're listening to this show as a podcast, I would encourage you to listen live during our broadcast times exclusively on octalkradio.net. The goal for this show is to help you, our listening audience, to make better, more timely decisions, and we do that by interviewing thought leaders and peer executives who have transferable knowledge, ideas, and experiences. I would like to thank Smart Business Magazine for sponsoring the show today. Smart Business Magazine is a management journal providing insight and advice for top decision makers. To learn more about Smart Business Magazine, visit their website, www.sbnonline.com. And when you're there, select the Orange County local journal to see coverage of our great county. Critical Mass, the radio show, is an extension of our 16-year consulting practice. One of the things that we do is we build CEO peer groups for executives and business owners. We do that in cooperation with Renaissance Executive Forums. Executive Forums is an international organization, and they're committed to helping their members take their business to the next level. My business partner, Doug Gefeller, and I currently chair multiple CEO peer groups. Doug is a master certified coach, which is a distinction achieved by less than 900 certified coaches in the world. Doug is the lead partner in charge of our coaching practice. Doug hosts a call-in talk show right here on octalkradio.net. It airs on the first and third Thursday of each month in this time slot, which is 4 to 5 p.m. Be sure to tune in and listen to the coaching perspective. And if you'd like to, call in and talk with Doug. Ask him questions. Test his knowledge. Can't hurt, right? My book, Critical Mass, The 10 Explosive Powers of CEO Peer Groups, is the first book ever written about the peer group experience and is available for sale on Amazon.com. You can find it simply by going to Amazon.com and typing in my name, Richard Franzi, F-R-A-N-Z-I. If you'd like to learn more about either our CEO peer group practice or our executive coaching practice, then I would suggest that you check out our website, and it's www.criticalmassforbusiness.com. That's Critical Mass, M-A-S-S, Mass, for, F-O-R, business.com. Say, if you'd like to join in the conversation today, then I would say one of the places to do that is going to octalkradio.net's website. Go to their community chat room using your Facebook or Twitter name. Just log on, and we'll be monitoring it periodically throughout the show this afternoon and possibly have you engage us in a conversation through social media. We're going to do something a little bit different today. As you know, this is generally an interview show where we have one or two guests, luminaries from the Orange County business community. But I wanted to do something a little bit different today because I had the great privilege in October, way back in October, to attend the 2010 Economic Conference, which was hosted by the Orange County Business Council and also in partnership with the Mihalo School of Business and Economics at Cal State Fullerton. This was the 16th annual Economic Forecast Conference, and it was held at the Hyatt Regency in Irvine. The event featured Dr. Anil Puri, who's the dean of the business school, and Dr. Mira Farka of Cal State Fullerton. And they were presenting their findings and forecasts for 2011, as well as we had the great opportunity to listen to Richard Davis, who is CEO of U.S. Bank Corp, which is the 11th largest bank here in the United States, and that's both investment banks and commercial banks. And Mr. Davis is also a graduate of Cal State Fullerton's Business School. And so what I thought I would do for a part of the show today is just – share with you some of the findings and forecasts that were presented by both Dr. Farka and Dr. Puri. The findings are included in their economic forecast, which I have a copy of the booklet, and I would strongly encourage you to do a couple things if you're so inclined. First of all, if you'd like to get the entire report, which I'm going to be highlighting a little bit from today, then I would encourage you to get in touch with the Mihalo School of Business and Economics at Cal State Fullerton, request a copy, and see how you might obtain this book, which is just a wealth of data and information, and something that I would highly recommend that you have in your possession. If you weren't one of the – it was a sold-out conference, if I didn't mention that to you – one of the lucky people to be in the room that afternoon for lunch, late morning and early afternoon. Also, put on your calendar to attend the Future Economic Forecast Conference. The annual forecast conference is always in October, towards the end of October, and it's generally at the Hyatt in Irvine, and you can find it either off the Orange County Business Council's website, which is ocbc.org, www.ocbc.org. And then there's also a spring, kind of mid-year update that Dr. Puri presents usually at the Hyatt as well. And that generally is in May or April timeframe. I'm not sure of the exact month. But, you know, it's in the springtime, pre-summer, which kind of gives an update that offsets what he covers in October. Outstanding opportunity to hear from the leading business school here in Orange County and in the Western United States about what their findings have been. And I'm going to attempt to do a little bit of justice just by talking with kind of some of the key learnings that I took away and quoting directly out of the economic forecast that my producer policies that I have in my hand. So, and then putting a little bit of the spin on it from Rick Franzi's perspective, critical business owner, critical mass for business, about what we might be seeing both in our peer groups and what previous radio show guests are saying, to just try to give you context for this outstanding report that was developed by both Dr. Puri and Dr. Farka. Okay? As I sat in the audience, before we get into anything specific out of it, I was taken with how having had the good fortune to go to the economic forecast for a number of years, how, you know, you get a general sense just from the room, the mood in the room, if you will. And I think because it is made up largely of local business owners, entrepreneurs, and business executives from the Orange County business community, it's a psychological, if you will, or emotional reflection, just the general state of the group before the meeting starts as to, you know, how are they feeling. And I would have to say that this certainly, as it relates to the 2009-2008 Economic Forecast Conference, the mood was much more upbeat. The discussions in the halls before they opened the conference room for us to sit down and find our table, etc., was much more genuine and jovial, than less tense, you know, if I can find the right way to describe it. And so the general feeling was that, you know, people were maybe breathing a little bit easier and able to exhale a little bit more than they had been in the previous 2 years. Certainly nowhere like it was in 2005 and 6 and 7, leading up to what was, you know, very tough 8 and 9. So as I prepared for the conference to start, and as I found my place in the room at the table, I was feeling that the general mood of the audience was somewhat reflective, hopefully, of what I was going to hear from the doctors about what their economic and academic findings were and what the future. You know, it's important to know where we've been, but everybody's there also to sort of hear how they're reading the tea leaves. And they have been highly accurate in their historic forecasts about the economic robustness and performance. And so, you know, what they say has great validity with me and with those members that are in the audience and were in the audience on October 28th. So just from a general sense, I felt that the audience reflected sort of what I was seeing here on the radio show, Critical Mass, the radio show, and well as what we're doing in the business, Doug and I are doing in the business community, both inside of our peer group settings, as well as in our executive coaching and the other work that we do. But this report is a forecast report, which is both, you know, kind of an economic outlook and a forecast. And they talked about not only Orange County, but Southern California and kind of national as well. And as I said, this was put together by the Institute for Economic and Environmental Studies, and it was a research report with a Neil Puri PhD kind of heading the work, as well as other contributions from others, both in his organization and other organizations that he works with. So, you know, as I look through the report, one of the things, and listen and reflect on what Dr. Farka and Dr. Puri talked about is, you know, they refer to it kind of as an the outlook is, in a nutshell, is, you know, no double dip, which, if you know, many of us earlier this year were worried that we were headed, and many in the media were writing about, and people were talking about the opportunity and potential for a double dip recession. And so kind of right out of the gate to have them reassure us that from their perspective, no double dip was again reassuring, but to also hear from them it's going to be a painful crawl was not too encouraging, but it was certainly could obviously be worse. They talked about the rebound in the economic activity has been weak and uninspiring, with what they call in economics terms, you know, kind of below trend growth but above average unemployment. And also there's a myriad of their term headwinds that have severely constrained growth. And, you know, from a mid-market company, business leader, small and mid-market company, we certainly are facing still into some pretty tough headwinds. And headwinds can also be uncertainty, and there is certainly, which they talked about during the conference, there's a reasonable amount of uncertainty about the future. They were talking about the slump in the economic activity was, you know, here in the second half of the year, largely due to the waning of what were fiscal and monetary stimulus. You know, much has been written, and certainly in the last election cycle, talking about did the stimulus packages that were passed through both administrations, largely credited to the current administration, but did they have any impact? And as they were, you know, coming to an end, what was the real impact of that? As well as Dr. Puri and Dr. Farka talked about, you know, the end of a inventory cycle, which was, you know, many businesses kind of replenishing some of their diminished inventory because they had, during the, you know, free fall days of the early part of the recession, really allowed their inventories to run down drastically. And so there was some benefit to them improving and kind of restocking their inventory. But as we also know, there was tremendous concern over Europe's sovereign debt. It tipped off by what was in the headlines earlier this year around Greece's ability to repay its debts and how that pulled the entire Eurozone into having to bail them out, or at least come up with a plan that gave confidence to the world, different world governments and, you know, economies, that Europe could stand together on this issue, as well as adverse developments in international trade. And so there were quite a number of things that Dr. Farka and Dr. Puri were discussing. But, you know, from their perspective, and I'm quoting now out of their report here, they argued that although the economy is more vulnerable now than earlier in the year, it will not relapse into a recession. And so, again, that was kind of the headline, you know, no double dip. And they talked about the economy continuing to heal in what they've called a recovery of two halves. By that, wherein they meant the second half growth will move forward at a rate above stall speed. You know, the growth in the GDP and the economy will be above stall speed, but too slow to make a significant difference in the jobless rate, which is, you know, part of what they talked about at length, both at the conference and inside this report, is the effect of the recession, the latest recession, on unemployment, and how unemployment will be affected by this slow but hopefully steady recovery. They mentioned that the recovery should eventually become self-sustained. In other words, you know, you understand, self-sustained, kind of building upon itself and gradually picking up a bit more steam. But in their opinion, based on their report and what they talked about at the conference, is that that's probably not going to be for a year from now. You know, end of 2011, possibly not until early 2012. And for many of us, that feels like quite a long time from now. But in other ways, it gives you hope that by this time next year, you know, we should be seeing some signs of a sustained recovery and maybe picking up a bit more steam. Yeah, they were talking that, you know, the current consensus view seems disproportionately focused on negative factors, and they thought, and they talk about this in their report, missed recent modest improvements. They say, you know, business spending from their data had picked up, Corporate profit margins were at a record high. We're going to talk about that in a couple of minutes here. And private final demand seemed more robust than previously feared. And so they were seeing that there was final demand growing, but they saw the growth would be restrained in the near term as the impetus from the money policies and from the inventory restocking is transitioning into final demand. So it's kind of the normal business cycle of, so much of our GDP in this country is driven off of personal demand and consumption. That's a big part of any recovery. And, you know, in a couple of minutes here, I'll talk just briefly about some of what they said about the housing market. But it really is dependent on individuals, the housing market, and how they feel about the price of their home and the available credit as well. So I found that to be interesting. We had, as I said, the keynote speaker was Richard Davis, who's the CEO of U.S. Bancorp. And one of the things that he was talking about during his talk, which I think coincides with what I just covered here from their introduction, was that we may be at the halftime of this recession. You know, we're couple of years into it. There's probably a couple of years to go. And so, which supports what Dr. Puri and Farka were saying, maybe end of next year, beginning of 2012 is when they saw the recovery really coming self-sustaining. That's a little bit over a year away. And then, take another year to kind of get us moving in an even more positive direction. And so, part of what Mr. Davis talked about was not just that we're at halftime in this recession, but in many cases, the actions that we were taking that got us into this situation are not the actions that we need to be taking to get out of it. And there needs to be a new thinking applied to many, many of our businesses and how we approach the opportunities that are currently present for us in the economy. And so, it caused me to sit back and think, well, that's part of what we're seeing in the group as well, the opportunity for our members to come together and share what they're seeing in the economy and how they're dealing with the challenges that's presented inside their business. Others are learning from it because in many cases, if not all the cases, none of us have seen this type of effect of the recession on our businesses. And if we have seen it like this, it might not have been to this level and duration or this pronounced not only in our industry, but in many, if not all the industries across the marketplace. This has truly been an unprecedented recessionary time that, we've moved through. You know, when they talk about a recovery of two halves scenario, the second half, they said, which likely span the next six quarters. So this, again, they presented this in October. So the next six quarters, a year and a half, will be slightly more subdued than the first half. And so they saw, again, this, which was kind of their title for their opening, which I'll refer back to, which was, the outlook in a nutshell, no double dip, but a painful crawl. And so the first half, which we've gone through of this recovery, now we're into the second half, is another six quarters, is going to be more subdued than the growth that we saw in the first half. They talked about some dragging fundamentals, and one of them was the labor market. They talk about the labor market will remain a significant drag on recovery over the short term. The fact that the unemployment rate should remain above 9% well into 2011. And they also cautioned that it may yet rise from its present level as the labor force expands, because every month new entrants into the labor force are coming, and you have to have job growth such that we absorb the people that have been displaced, but also able to take on the increased workforce workers that are coming in. Job growth, they said, would be expected to be uneven over the next 2 years. Some sectors, they highlighted exports, capital goods, infrastructure, healthcare, and education, they thought would post modest gains, while other sectors like construction and retail and financial services should be a drag on the recovery cycle as these industries continue to restructure. A lot has been made, as we're all aware, in the last election cycle about the unemployment rate. And can anything really be done to make it a significant dent in reducing the national jobless rate, based on the work and the forecast, you know, that I see here in front of me that was presented at the economic conference. It's concerning to me that we're going to be having a sustained high level of unemployment in the foreseeable future. One of the other drags that they talked about was the consumer spending. You know, they talked about the good news is the consumer spending is growing, albeit at a snail-like pace. Their real personal consumption has risen for 7 consecutive months. Going forward, consumption spending is expected to grow, but at a very low rate of around 2%. And with so much of the GDP being made up by kind of consumer consumption and personal spending, that continues to kind of be a drag on recovery as we move forward. One of the other areas they talked about was household finances. And so we're going to step for a minute out of the business world into the personal world. But, you know, the truth be told that many small business owners and certainly entrepreneurs kind of depend on their household finances for their business. Many historically have used the accumulated appreciation in their assets, most notably their home, as a way to possibly finance business expansion, cover cash flow shortfalls, you know, maybe even launch and start a business and go through those early years when the business is cash flow negative and you're using your accumulated wealth to help fund that growth and allow you to continue to stay in business. You know, their position on household finances, well, they thought this recovery will drag longer than usual, partly because of the rebalancing of household balance sheets that we've all been going through, evidenced by their numbers. The recession removed over $17 trillion, with a T, $17 trillion in household net worth. And so that's a huge hit, right, for the U.S. consumer. And what they said this did, it caused a sea change in consumer behavior. Again, when you think that many small business owners and entrepreneurs kind of count on their household finances and their household net worth to leverage their business a bit to allow them to do things that they believe they need to do, either to sustain or grow their business, $17 trillion coming out of the U.S. net household net worth has significant impact on business, not just on the household finances. They did suggest, or their data did say, that the household net worth rebound by $4.7 trillion. So that's good news since the first quarter of 2009, but they also said that's still 18, almost 19% below the pre-crisis peak, and so people are deleveraging because of that. The average available credit has shrunk even more rapidly, declining for 8 straight months, and so not only are people paying off their loans, but also the available credit that's out there, which is another place that small and mid-sized business executives and business owners have gone when necessary to shore up their, you know, their business's balance sheet, is to their available credit on the personal side, whether it's through credit cards or lines of credit that they might have that are outside the business, bringing it into the business to enable them to meet the cash flow demands of the business. And so this is a drag not only as it relates to the GDP, the household financing, but also in my eyes, it's a drag on small and mid-sized businesses because of this dependence that many of businesses have had on their personal net worth to kind of smooth out the business. They talked about considering and expecting that the deleveraging process is going to continue, and it's going to continue over the foreseeable future. And by that, they mean maybe for the next 4 years. That there has been, when they said a sea change earlier, and these are their words, what I'm hearing them say is that there's been an awakening, a change of beliefs, of people making a concerted effort to begin to save. And they talked about household savings rates going up to 6 to 8% over the next 4 years. Now, some of you may know that for many recent years, the United States has had a zero to negative savings rate, which means people in the country were spending on average more than they were making, and because they had leverage, credit, whatever, they could go into debt, basically. And so, you know, what's challenging about the economists, there's always two sides to everything. And while it's good, because for years people were lamenting the fact that we did not save enough in the United States as compared to Japan and China and other industrialized and, you know, emerging nations, and we needed to do that because that basic savings could be used by banks, et cetera, to, you know, and other places to kind of help the economy grow. Now that we're saving, it is a challenge because people aren't spending the money, which is important to create demand, which, you know, leads to a faster recovery. So nothing's ever completely good or completely bad, it would seem, in the world of an economics, at least from Rick Franzi's perspective. I think this might be a good time for us to take just a short break so that we can go off and you know, hear from our sponsor. Our sponsor, as you all know, is Smart Business Magazine. And then we'll come back and I'll continue and kind of finish up with some of the findings that came from the 2010 Economic Forecast Conference put on by Orange County Business Council and Cal State Fullerton's Mihalo School of Business and Economics.
Smart Business Network is a business-to-business multimedia company providing insight, advice, and strategy for C-level executives of fast growth, middle market, and large companies. As one of the nation's largest publishers of local management journals, under the Smart Business name, Smart Business Network publishes 19 regional print editions, presents dozens of large and small-scale business conferences and award programs, and produces a vibrant interactive digital media presence. For more information, visit us at www.sbnonline.com.
Welcome back to Critical Mass, the radio show. This is your host, Rick Franzi, and thank you for joining me today, either live or at some future point on one of our podcasting sites, whether it be Apple iTunes or off of our site, www.criticalmassforbusiness. I'm sharing with you today just a summary of the findings that were presented at the 2010 Economic Forecast Conference put on by Orange County Business Council in partnership with the Mihalo School of Business and Economics at Cal State Fullerton. I'm finishing up with the third of what Dr. Puri, who's the dean of the Mihalo School of Business, and Dr. Farka were talking about as dragging fundamentals in the third and final one. The first one was consumer spending, and we talked about household finance, and the final one is the housing market. They write that the outlook for the housing market has turned pretty grim and is unlikely to brighten in the near future. Woes in the housing market are largely due to the expiration of the host of government programs. Many of you, you know, were over the home buyer tax credit, which was extended through April of 2010, as well as a moratorium on foreclosures that was put into place. Nonetheless, they thought a slew of those government programs, which were to the tune of $30 billion, there are still some around to help help homeowners avoid foreclosures. There are 2.8 million at-risk foreclosures of the 6 million delinquent borrowers that are out there. So there's a kind of an unprecedented wave of unfortunately, homeowners that are at risk with foreclosure and that are certainly delinquent, which is kind of feeding the outlook for the housing market over the next few quarters kind of to downshift. And although the free fall is behind us, indicators suggest that a strong rebound is unlikely. And they were also suggesting from a national perspective that home values should trend lower over the next two quarters. Maybe shedding as much as an additional 5% from the current level. So for those of us that were kind of looking for the home values to increase, the data might suggest that we may have to wait a little bit for that to happen. So those were what they referred to as the dragging fundamentals. They talked about a few kind of dimming bright spots. The first and foremost that they talked about were the fiscal and monetary policy. They talked about and wrote about the recovery thus far has been supported by unprecedented efforts on the part of the federal government and the Federal Reserve, which combined for a massive price tag of $4 trillion, again with a T, $4 trillion. and government spending had reached its limits, you know, and the appetite for massive intervention from the populace has really kind of stopped, and as the economy continues to kind of limp forward. They talk about, in addition to long-term structural problems, there's an extraordinary increase in policy uncertainty, which is, they saw kind of a dimming bright spot and fits into the fiscal and monetary policy, whether it's the Health Care Act that was passed in earlier this year in March, and other uncertainties about Bush's tax cuts, if the current administration with the new group of people that are coming in, how they're going to be dealing with tax cuts. And so there was a lot of uncertainty that continues to be kind of surrounding the both the fiscal, and the monetary policy. One of the other dimming bright spots they talked about was business investment and production. Business investment and manufacturing activity, they say, had been a bright spot in the early stages of the recovery. Remember, they're talking about kind of two halves to a recovery. So the first part of it, because private domestic investment had increased as a percentage of real GDP through, you know, Q4 of 2009. And so there was probably, to go along with what we saw with, you know, inventory rebuilding, there was money being spent. But they expect business investment and production activity to continue to increase over the forecast horizon, but at a significantly more moderate pace. So, you know, business investment is in non-residential structures, you know, should slow down a little bit, and the weakness in the consumer real estate market is going to continue to persist. And so what we were looking for, which was from business investment and production activity continue to increase, it's going to be at a much slower rate than what we saw from the first half of the recovery. They talked about global economy and net exports, and that the recovery has stretched around the globe, but the pace of the rebound is uneven in different and across different regions. And we certainly have heard, you know, and if you're watching the nightly news, business news, you know, you're aware that China's economy is continuing to grow at a significant rate, you know, 8-9%, and continue to move forward, as well as, you know, places like the other BRIC countries, whether it's Brazil or one of the other ones. And so that global recovery is uneven depending on where you are and kind of the basis for your economic production. They talked about bright spots, and so I wanted to just kind of bring this discussion kind of full circle to what they shared with us, which I appreciate the bright spots in a difficult report that they had to present based on their findings. But they call them nascent bright spots. So one of them is the corporate sector. In their analysis, corporations have cut costs with abandon. They've decreased their workforce. They've borrowed at extremely favorable conditions by issuing either bonds at, you know, ultra low interest rates, or the cost of money is very low right now. This allowed them to retool their operations to deal with lower revenues, and many of them have consolidated their balance sheets and acquired, you know, inexpensive assets, or maybe expanded through M&A operations at a fast pace. And that fastest pace really since the end of the crisis. So that's accelerating. And so in their words, the spectacular rebound of the corporate sector, while it's welcomed, has not translated into business expansion or, as talked about when we talked about unemployment, higher employment. So this has not translated into business expansion or higher employment. Thanks in large part, they say, to the frantic cost-cutting, the corporate sector is currently sitting on, their terms, a pile of cash. It's amounting to a staggering $1.6 trillion, with a T, $1.6 trillion, or 6% of the value of their total assets. So corporate profits and cost-cutting has allowed corporations in the U.S. to amass $1.6 trillion, with a T, in real cash. So the question is, when will that cash be put into either employment, into expansion, or productive use for the business rather than kept it as a liquid asset? There was not, at this point, any that I can recall discussion of that. But it's, you know, it's good to be aware, if you need to be aware, that there is significant cash in them thar hills. Not that I'm saying we get our pitchforks and go and try and get it from the large corporations, but it is the liquid lifeblood for growth, and hopefully we'll see that materialize in far as corporate decisions in the future. They talked about the financial sector, and they said, you know, 18 months after reaching the bottom, the financial sector staged a spectacular, their words, recovery, with equity prices soaring 67% from trough to peak. And so those of you that made a play on the financial sector probably are well aware of the rise back for that sector. This has brought forth a substantial improvement in the health of the banking sector. Yay, because most small business owners and mid-market executives look to their banking relationship as a key source of capital and cash for operations and expansion. Generally, they're not going into the equity markets to get that. You know, they're private and they're looking for their banking relationship to really help them. So that's good. But they also say, nonetheless, banks have remained, no surprise to this listening audience, I'm sure, reluctant to lend. And there's always at least two sides to every conversation. And I'm not here to defend or to attack the banking industry for lending or not lending. It is, in this report's words, a reluctance to lend, as well as having vast amounts of excess reserves to the tune of $1.3 trillion. So in the banking, partly fueled by savings, partly fueled by other areas, banks holding on to this, there's $1.3 trillion that the banks have that they have in reserves, which is significant, especially when you go back to $1.6 trillion that are sitting in corporations as a pile of cash. You know, that's close to $3 trillion of liquid cash assets that could be at some point put into productive use for economic growth. The other thing that they talked about was inflation. No good economic conference would be worth its salt if there wasn't a moment of reflection on inflation. And their view was inflation should remain near current readings for the balance of this year, edging steadily higher in late 2010 and 2012. Obviously, there was some conversation and concern about could inflation grow more quickly than what their current appraisal was. There's always that risk, largely due to maybe actions and reactions that happen out of Washington, D.C. And now that we're in an increasingly global business environment, what might happen around the world could affect the U.S. inflation rate as well. So let me just kind of go through their report on their forecast summaries and share with you just a couple quick things before we conclude this part of Critical Mass, the radio show. Their summary paragraph led off with these two sentences. The U.S. economy should continue to grow at an uneven and modest pace over the near term. Excuse me. The recovery will bear a closer resemblance to a mild recession than to an expansion. Ouch. Right? I mean, I guess it's all relative. If someone's banging you on the head or on the hand with a hammer when they stop, I guess that could be defined as feeling good because at least the new pain isn't there. But I don't know that feels good necessarily, but maybe a bad analogy too. But the recovery will bear a closer resemblance to a mild recession than to an expansion. They talked specifically about some Orange County and Southern California, and as it relates to unemployment, not a lot of good information. Well, let me say it was a lot of good information, but it wasn't good to hear what they were talking about. The unemployment rate, as we know, jumped sharply in 2007 to 2009. It more than doubled in Orange County. It was 4% unemployment, 9% in June of 2009. And remember that June of 2009 is the official end of the recession based on how a recession is defined, which is GDP, positive growth, GDP. The end of the recession, it did touch as high as 10% and has remained in the 9 to 9.5% range. During this recession, this region lost payroll jobs at a record pace. Orange County job losses reached their worst in the third quarter of 2009. But if you look over a three-year period of 2007 through 2009, Orange County lost 144,000 payroll jobs, 110,000 of which were lost in 2009 alone. Significant job loss in the county. In the first 7 months, they say, of this year through July, the county's economy had continued to shed jobs, which would have been at an annual rate of 14,000. Construction, which is in Orange County historically a sizable and significant sector for the region, was the hardest hit and dragged related industries and the overall economy with it. Construction jobs shed over 120,000 construction jobs between 2007 and 2009. So in Southern California, and so I don't want to confused about the 144,000 were Orange County, the 121,000 were Southern California, slightly different, but a significant industry that was impacted by this recession. And we know, those of us that here in Orange County doing business, we know how vital and vibrant the Orange County construction market is to related industries. The Orange County housing market was much like the national picture, they say. Both in here in Orange County and Southern California, housing market had taken a turn for the worse, frankly, since the first quarter of this year, and they saw it remaining severely weak condition. Housing prices had begun to recover in Orange County after hitting a bottom in Q1 of 2009. We lost 42% of the average value of homes here in Orange County. Went from a little over $700,000 peak in 2006 to just over $420,000 in January of 2009. The current median as of July this year was $514,000, which was an increase over 2009. But again, they see the prices kind of roughly staying the same or going down slightly and moving forward. So the pattern has been repeated throughout, although they did talk specifically about the Inland Empire, which had seen even more severe gyrations in the housing market. While they had difficult information, they did, I think, present in this report, which, again, if you don't have it, you should demand it, get it. Ask them for a copy. It is outstanding. It is the economic forecast put together by Cal State University at Fullerton and the Institute for Economic and Environmental Studies. A wealth of solid information. I don't even know how many pages it is, but us as business leaders, it's 52 pages. Us as business leaders need to understand both the microeconomics relative to our business as well as the macroeconomics relative to the larger economies that we work in, both in Orange County, Southern California, and in the world and in the nation. And according to this recession, but we're going to continue to heal in what has been deemed a recovery of two halves, where the second half growth, which we're in now, will move forward at a rate above stall speed, but too slow to make a significant difference in the jobless rate. So all of us, are working in a world that some of these factors are out of our control. And so as Doug and I like to share with our members in our peer group and in his executive coaching, it's up to you as the business leader to figure out how to be successful given what's going on around you. And many of us work in businesses and industries where there's still significant opportunity for gain and growth. The question is, how do we go about and build strategies that allow us to continue to show positive movement in our businesses? Many times the firms are not that large relative to the industry or market segment or niche that you're in, such that maybe some of this economic data doesn't directly relate to your business because there is opportunity within your smaller defined world to be able to capitalize on growth opportunities. And so I'm encouraged to know it may be halftime. I'm encouraged to know that while it may not feel like a recovery, it's moving in the right direction. I'm convinced that 2011 has every bit of potential to be better than 2010. In 2010, many indicators was better than 2009. And so nothing but opportunity, hopefully, moving forward with us. But I wanted to share with you was an outstanding data analysis done by Cal State Fullerton, and I would encourage you, if you don't have a copy, to get in touch with the Mahalo College of Business and Economics and request a copy and see how you might get it. Maybe there's a copy at your local library. But hopefully what I've shared with you today piques your interest to attend the economic conference in the future, both the one in the spring, which is the mid-year, and the annual, which is always in the fall. And to best of my knowledge, it's always in October. I'd like to thank Smart Business Magazine for sponsoring the show today. Smart Business Magazine is a management journal providing insight and advice for top decision makers. If you'd like to learn more about Smart Business Magazine, then I would encourage you to visit their website. And their website is www.sbnonline.com. If you'd like to learn more about FOR, Critical Mass for Business. And you know, this is Rick Franzi, host of Critical Mass for Business, saying until the next show, I hope all your decisions move your company in a positive direction.
You've been listening to Critical Mass, only on octalkradio.net. Stay tuned for Live from the Derby, coming up next.